Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Good morning, everyone. It is Monday, August 7th, 2017, and this is the week that an actual football game is going to be played. On Thursday night, the Philadelphia Eagles and Green Bay Packers will square off at Lambeau Field for the first of 4 exhibition games, and I'm sure this is a little bit of a welcome sight for Mike McCarthy and his coaching staff because they can finally put some official distance between themselves and the last time that they were on the field, which was, of course, the debacle in the Georgia Dome against the Atlanta Falcons in the NFC Championship game. So this week is going to be exciting for a lot of reasons. First, we get to see a lot of these young players in a game setting for the very first time at this level. There's probably going to be some more injuries this week than there have been through the first handful of practices of camp. This is when there's going to be some real significant hitting, and of course during the game, none of these young players are going to be holding back because they're going to be trying to make the team, whether it's here or in Philadelphia or any of the subsequent exhibition games. So I expect there to be a lot of injury news this week. I expect there to be a lot of stock up, stock down for many of these rookies, and it's really a chance to see some of the depth on both of these teams, the Eagles and the Packers, and see which areas perhaps are a little bit stronger than might have been anticipated coming into the year, and which areas are really going to struggle because some of that young depth is not ready to contribute. My name is Michael Cohen, and this is the Packers Podcast. I thank you guys for starting your week with me after a nice weekend here in Green Bay. The Packers, of course, had practice on Friday night outdoors at Ray Nitschke Field. It was a packed house. It was definitely the most populous practice of training camp so far. There were fans lining all three sides of the field, and of course the fourth side is the Don Hutson Center, and so that's where the media walks up and down, and it's not open to the fans. But on the other three sides of the rectangle, it was packed. There were fans 4, 5, 6, 7 rows deep. Everyone was really into it. It had rained all day, and by the time it cleared up, there were thousands of fans there to watch. And then Saturday night was the annual practice inside Lambeau Field. There were 77,000 tickets sold, but the final attendance was, let's see, I wrote it down here somewhere. The final attendance was significantly less than that. It was 63,156. So 14,000 of the tickets that were sold went unused. I think that was probably due to some weather issues that the Packers had. The practice was scheduled to start at 6:25, if I remember correctly, but there was thunder and lightning and rain in the area at the time, so things were pushed back into the evening. And I'm wondering if some of the families that, A, were on their way there at the time of the weather, or B, were there with small children and didn't want to stick around, maybe those are the people that took off and went home, and so their tickets might not have been counted toward the final attendance numbers. But it was an interesting two practices for a couple different reasons. So let's jump right in and talk about the last thing that everyone remembered from Saturday night's practice at Lambeau Field, and that was an absolutely heinous kicking display by Mason Crosby. Crosby came into Saturday's practice 22 of 23 so far in training camp. He'd been terrific, and the only miss that he had hit off the left upright, so it's not as if he shanked it or, you know, pushed it way wide or anything like that. He's been right on the money all through training camp. And then Saturday night, he took 11 kicks at the very end of practice, and he went 5 for 11 and missed 6 of his last 7 kicks. It was really, really bizarre. He started out by making 3 consecutive extra points, one from the left, one from the middle, one from the right. Then he hit a 35-yard kick from the middle. Then he missed from 40 on the right hash. He missed from 42 on the right hash. He made 45 yards down the middle, and then he missed 4 in a row. 48 left hash, 50 left hash, 50 left hash, 50 left hash. a lot of these kicks were pushed off to the right. Some of them were really ugly, and the ball flight was low and unsightly and just not what you see from Mason Crosby. Some of them looked like they had good distance and good ball flight, and then they were just pushed or pulled slightly in one direction. So it was a very, very, melancholy end of practice, you can say, because it had been a really spirited evening. There was all kinds of competitiveness, lots of physical play, lots of good reps, and then Crosby comes out there and sort of lays a dud in the last drill of practice right before everyone clears the field and the fireworks come on. So it was kind of like building up toward the fireworks, and then all of a sudden you have Crosby going off a cliff. Now, the question is, how much of this was Crosby's fault, and how much of it has to do with the other two people involved in the operation? Of course, you have the long snapper, Derek Hart, and then you have the holder, who is punter Justin Vogel. Both of those guys were not the holder and snapper on the team last season, so you're talking about 66% of the field goal operation being new from last year to this year. Hart is a guy that played college football and then gave it up and went to become an engineer at Harley-Davidson in Pennsylvania, and then he decided to give that up because he missed football, so he came back. He ended up working out for the Packers. They signed him in March, I believe it was, and he's been here ever since. And while he was here, he fought off the challenge of Tabor Pepper, who was another long snapper that the Packers signed, and he was here only a couple months and just did not pan out. Now, when you talk about Justin Vogel, of course, he's been mentioned a couple of times on this podcast. Vogel was the undrafted free agent from Miami that signed with the Packers right after the conclusion of the seventh round of the draft. He was considered by many to be the top punter in this year's draft, even though it was a year in which no punters were drafted. And Vogel, like all the punters recently, has the double duty of being the holder for Mason Crosby. Now, earlier in the practice, they had done some punting drills, and there was at least one or two snaps from Hart back to Vogel in the punting drill that were not where you wanted them to be. I remember one very clearly in which Vogel had to jump, and he didn't have to reach over his head, but his hands probably caught it where his face would have been, and then he, of course, has to come back down, lower the punt, drop the ball, and get ready to clear it out of traffic. And so that right there made me wonder, okay, maybe it was just a bad day for Hart, and he was having some snap issues, etc., etc. Then you start to think about some of the other factors that have played into this throughout training camp. Now, one of the best things about Brett Goud, who has been the long snapper for the prior, 8 years? 6 years? Something like that. He'd been here for a long, long time. And, of course, he was an unrestricted free agent. He remains unsigned, and so he's no longer with the Packers. One of the best things about him, and it's really remarkable if you think about it, is that Mason Crosby and Tim Mastey used to talk all the time about how Goud was so good and so precise with his snaps that by the time the ball got to Tim Mastey, who was the holder and the punter over the last 6 years prior to last season, by the time the ball got from the line of scrimmage to Tim Mastey, he didn't even have to turn it, because the way he would catch it, Goud had mastered it so that the ball landed in Mastey's hands with the laces already pointing toward the upright. In other words, laces out, which is what you want. So all Mastey had to do was catch the ball, put it down, and then Mason Crosby would swing his right leg through, and everything was fine. And so think about that for a minute. You're talking about a guy throwing a ball backwards between his legs with a spiral, and he knows the velocity and the distance so well that he can land it in a way that the laces are already in the perfect spot once Tim Mastey catches the ball. Why is that so significant? Well, the more that the holder has to do with the ball, in other words, the more the holder has to manipulate it between the time it touches his hands and the time Crosby swings his right leg through, of course, the greater the chance of error. There's just more going on, there's more activity, there's more movement, and anytime you're doing more to the football, there's a greater chance that it can slip, it can slide, it can be placed in the wrong spot, etc., etc. So there's a couple different ways you can look at this. One, you could say that maybe Hart was just having a bad day, or maybe he's not as high quality a snapper as the Packers would like to have on their roster in the long term. You can also say that B, maybe Vogel had some trouble spinning some of the snaps, because there was at least one kick earlier in the week where the laces were not in the right spot, and Crosby talked about that a little bit. And then, of course, there's the third option, that Crosby just is not used to these two guys, or had a bad day, or wasn't comfortable kicking on the slick surface because it had rained all day. There's a number of different factors, that can go into this. And so it'll be really interesting to hear what special teams coordinator Ron Zook has to say when he speaks to the media later today. And hopefully Mason Crosby will speak as well after practice, because he did not speak, or if he did, it was extremely briefly after the practice Saturday night. So that's something to keep an eye on, especially if the Packers make a move at long snapper, because then you probably have an idea about the origin of the problem. Another thing that has jumped out to me over the last couple days, and, you know, I guess in theory it's been since the start of camp, but now that we're enough practices into it, you can sort of start to evaluate or recognize certain patterns, and that would be just some really, really rough play by Ladarius Gunter so far. Now, Gunter, of course, was the number one cornerback for the majority of last season due to injuries. Coming into the regular season, he made the 53-man roster, and he was the number four corner. Of course, number one was Sam Shields, who suffered that concussion against the Jacksonville Jaguars that very likely has ended his career. He hasn't played since, and he is now a free agent after the Packers released him. The number two corner was supposed to be Demarius Randall, who was the first round pick in 2015. But as Randall struggled and then had some injury problems, ultimately leading to groin surgery, he fell off the face of the earth and was just a complete non-factor, a completely unreliable corner. And so he was out of the mix for the top spot. Then you look at Quentin Rollins, the second round pick in 2015. Rollins injured his groin as well and ultimately needed surgery immediately after the NFC Championship game. So he was playing hurt and he couldn't be counted on. And then later in the year, he also suffered that neck injury right before the playoffs during the Week 17 game at Detroit, where he sort of got upended and took a scary fall and kind of fell right on his shoulders and neck. So his helmet smashed into the turf. And so that left Gunter, the only healthy man standing, really, and he was forced to go from number four corner to number one corner. And, you know, given all the ridiculous situations he was in, like being asked to shadow Odell Beckham Jr., the tremendous receiver for the Giants, being asked to shadow Alshon Jeffrey or Julio Jones, all these number ones, you know, he actually didn't play too bad given the fact that he is an undrafted guy. He's not expected to be a number one receiver, and yet that's what he was asked to do week after week last year. The problem this year has been, flat out, he's just getting beat over and over and over again. He's getting beat. And so for those of you who may not have seen Gunter very often or are not too familiar with his style, he is a bigger corner. He's 6'1" and a half. He's got some solidness to him. He's got really long arms, but he has no speed. He's really, really slow. And that's the reason, ultimately, why he didn't get drafted coming out of Miami. And so the best thing that he does is play press coverage. And what that means is, at the line of scrimmage, as soon as the ball is snapped, press corners want to take their hands and put them into the chest of the receiver, and they want to bump them and shove them and grab them and get away with any kind of holding or pushing that they can within the first couple yards, because that disrupts A, the route, and B, the timing of the quarterback and the receiver. The problem this year has been, after Gunter's initial jam at the line of scrimmage, when guys are getting by him, he's unable to catch up. And so you look at just Saturday's practice in particular, and there were a number of really unsightly plays involving Gunter. Let me flip through my notes here, because I did write some of them down along the way. During the one-on-one drills, Trevor Davis made a leaping catch over Gunter down the left sideline, and Gunter didn't think Davis caught the ball because it was one of those 50-50 contested plays. And so when he saw that Davis took off down the sideline and ended up scoring what would have been a touchdown, he just sort of turned around and slammed his fist into the ground. He was so frustrated. Now I'm looking again at one of the periods again, or actually, excuse me, this was still in the one-on-one drill. Rookie seventh round pick Malachi Dupree makes a deep catch down the left sideline beyond Gunter because he'd ran past him, and that would have gone for a touchdown. Then you look at the team reps, and you started to see Josh Hawkins taking reps on the outside before Ladarius Gunter. And of course, Gunter started out training camp as the number two corner, with Devon House playing one side of the field on the perimeter and Gunter on the other. And he's since fallen down several notches on that depth chart. Still flipping through my notes here to some other portions of practice to see if I had any other notes on Gunter. Yeah. Okay. So then you look at the 2-minute drill right near the end of practice when this was with the second team offense and the second team defense. So Brett Hundley is in at quarterback, and there was a deep crossing play where the rookie fifth rounder, D'Angelo Yancey from Purdue, another receiver, beat Gunter across the middle on a crossing route, and he was able to just make an easy catch and take off down the sideline in stride until Gunter was able to force him out of bounds. And so that was all during Saturday's practice. You're talking about 3 significant gains against 2 players that are rookies and 1 player in Trevor Davis who was benched for the second half of last season. So that kind of gives you an idea of the type of struggles Gunter is having. And, you know, there's a long way to go. And as most of you remember, Gunter showed up much better in game action than he did in the early parts of training camp. And that's really where he came on, was by playing very well in the exhibition games and then also finding ways to intercept Aaron Rodgers. I think he was the only corner last year to intercept Aaron Rodgers more than once, if I remember correctly. So for him, he's in a real battle now, because you know Devon House is going to make the team. You know Kevin King, the rookie second-round pick, is going to make the team. You know Randall and Rollins are going to make the team. And so right there, that gives you 4 corners. Then you're talking about Gunter and Josh Hawkins, and then maybe one of the undrafted guys sneaking in there, like Donatello Brown or Rayshon Pringle. Those seem to be the top 2 undrafted guys. And so this is a real dogfight, I think, for Gunter, and he needs strong performances and consistent performances in the exhibition games, because he really has not put together much in the way of continuity over his first handful of practices. Now let's go the other way. Let's look at a guy who has been a regular contributor over the past couple years, but lost his job due to guys coming in through free agency, and this particular player has gone the other way. He's actually responded really well, to the point where I think he's, I don't want to say stealing playing time from some of the guys ahead of him, but demonstrating that he still can have a role on this team, even if it is a smaller one, and that would be tight end Richard Rodgers. Rodgers, of course, was the starter in 2015 with Andrew Corliss right behind him at number 2. And then last year, Rodgers lost his job when Jared Cook got here, the tight end who was a street free agent brought in by Ted Thompson. And so Richard Rodgers became the number 2 tight end behind Cook. And he still played a decent amount because the Packers really only used those 2 guys. But then this offseason, Cook left, of course, and Ted Thompson brought in 2 tight ends. He brought in Martellus Bennett, who was the top unrestricted free agent on the market, and then they brought in Lance Kendricks, the former Wisconsin Badger who had become a street free agent after he was released by the Rams. And so Rodgers was suddenly 3rd on the depth chart, and that's really what it's been through OTAs and the first week of training camp. But over the last couple practices, Richard Rodgers has actually played really well. I remember Friday night, he made a terrific catch in the end zone from Brett Hundley, I think it was, where he was sort of running a corner route toward the back part of the end zone, and he just kind of created separation from Kentrell Bryce, who had been playing a ton of reps and continues to play a ton of reps, even with the starting defense sometimes. And so he created a little bit of separation. It was a perfectly lofted throw from the quarterback, and like I said, I think it was Hundley, and Richard Rodgers reached up with 2 hands, grabbed the ball in the back of the end zone, and secured it in a spot where Bryce could not get a hand in, and it ended with a touchdown. Then you look at what happened Saturday night, and Richard Rodgers had probably his best practice from a receiving standpoint. There was one play during team reps where he took advantage of what looked like maybe a busted coverage down the middle, and he just sort of ran right by safety Marwin Evans, got open deep beyond the defense, and Hundley lofted a big high-arcing ball that Richard Rodgers caught easily for what looked like maybe a 50 or 55-yard touchdown, depending on where the play began. There was another play later in another team period in which they were going the other direction toward the opposite end zone, and it was the same type of deal where Rodgers created separation right up the seam, straight down the middle of the field, and the throw was made, but it was a touch behind him, and so when he reached back to make the play, one of the inside linebackers, a rookie undrafted player, Cody Hyman, was able to poke the ball away and force an incompletion. But then you go back to another team period later in practice, and Richard Rodgers has a nice catch on a crossing route over the middle where he ran right by linebacker Derek Matthews. And so, again, this is a guy that is not going to wow you with his athleticism. He's not going to wow you with his speed. And he's not going to be this real monstrous physical presence the way that Martellus Bennett is at 6'5 and a half and 275 pounds. What Richard Rodgers is a wide, thick-bodied player with really good hands. And why do those traits matter? Well, I think the good hands goes without saying, but the thick body matters for a couple reasons. One is that Richard Rodgers was a terrific high school basketball player. He is familiar with the sort of narrative that we've seen in recent years of good basketball players becoming good tight ends. You look at Antonio Gates for the San Diego Chargers. You look at Jimmy Graham for the New Orleans Saints and now the Seattle Seahawks. These are guys that understand the concepts of high pointing the football, of boxing out, you know, the way you would go for a rebound. You can do the same thing in certain scenarios with defensive players. And so Richard Rodgers does that to a pretty decent level, in my opinion. And so I've been saying this for a couple of months now, but I think Richard Rodgers does have a role on this team because, like I said, if you have really good hands and you have a big body and you're coordinated and you know how to use that body to shield defenders in certain areas, you can be a valuable player on offense. Does that mean he's going to catch 50 passes for 700 yards and 5 touchdowns? Absolutely not. Does it mean that he could catch about 40 balls for maybe a couple hundred yards and maybe 3, 4, 5 scores? Yeah, I really do think that's the case. And so Mike McCarthy has 3 tight ends that he can use at his disposal with 3 different body types and 3 different skill sets. And so I think it's going to be really interesting to see, A, how he incorporates all those guys into the offense, and then B, does he try and find ways for each of those guys to specialize a little bit? You know Martellus Bennett is going to be that guy that uses his size to just overpower smaller players, and he's, of course, the best blocking tight end. Then you look at Lance Kendricks. He's got the ability to move all around the formation. Yes, he can play in the traditional spot that a tight end occupies at the line of scrimmage, the end of the line of scrimmage. He can also play in that sort of fullback role that we've seen Richard Rodgers play at times, and he can be split out into the slot. And Richard Rodgers offers you a little bit of all of that, but again, with a slightly lower ceiling in terms of skill set. So, as Aaron Rodgers said last week, I don't think Richard Rodgers is a guy that you can completely write off because he does bring some value to this team, and he is a key member of a number of special teams units as he has been throughout his career. The last thing I want to bring up has to do with some of the pass rush themes that we've discussed at times since really since free agency, because that's when Julius Peppers and Dayton Jones walked away and went to the Carolina Panthers for Peppers and the Minnesota Vikings for Jones. And since then, there's really been a huge emphasis on getting the absolute most out of Kyler Fackrell, a third-round pick from last season, and Jahrone Elliott, a former undrafted free agent who's been on the roster the last couple of years but has not been able to maximize what seems to be some really strong athletic potential. Those are the two guys that are most likely to pick up the slack in terms of number of snaps at outside linebacker. Now, I'm going to talk about Elliott probably later in the week, but today I want to talk about Fackrell because, and my colleague Tom Silverstein noted this in his camp report the other day, Fackrell has been really, really poor. I mean, really, really poor. Last season when he came in, he was not strong enough, not confident enough, and just, it was clear that he needed time to develop. So you look at the one-on-one pass rush drills last year, which is a huge indication of where guys are at because it's one pass rusher against one offensive lineman with the goal of pressuring and or sacking the quarterback. And last year, Fackrell went winless. He didn't win a single rep during training camp. I think he was like 0-12 or 0-13. I forget the exact number. But then, as I mentioned on this podcast before, once the regular season started, he gained a little more confidence, he settled in, and he found ways to contribute on defense. This year, Fackrell remains winless in the one-on-one pass rush. Going into Saturday night's practice, he was 0-8 with one tie, and some of the writers had him 0-9. Didn't even give him the benefit of that one rep that looked like it could have been a tie. He's still not showing up in team reps, whether that's against the run or against the pass. He just doesn't seem to have anything in his arsenal right now that he can count on to consistently find success. And so he is a player that absolutely needs to turn it on in these exhibition games. And if he does not turn it on, not only are the Packers in trouble, specifically at that outside linebacker position, but it also puts a little bit more strain on the rest of the defense, because Clay Matthews and Nick Perry, your number one and number two outside linebackers, they can only give you so much pass rush before A, their bodies just get fatigued week after week after week, and B, there's only so much you can expect out of two guys. And so if Fackrell is not going to give you anything, then you have to find ways to generate pass rush in different manners, and that puts pressure on everybody from Dom Capers, the defensive coordinator, on down to guys like Jayron Elliott, as I mentioned, your slot corners, Demarius Randall and Quentin Rollins, who are going to be blitzing at times. And so it's one of those trickle-down effects. If your number three pass rusher is giving you nothing, then everything behind them has to step up, and you have to find ways to offset that lack of production. So Fackrell is a guy that many people, especially the coaches, the way that they were praising him all offseason, he was a guy that was expected to contribute significantly more than he did last season. But so far, through more than a week of training camp, it's really been nothing but the status quo as it relates to last season. So he is definitely a player to watch against the Eagles Thursday night and for every exhibition game over the next couple of weeks. Well, I've reached the 25-minute mark, and that means it is time for me to get out of here and let you guys continue with the rest of your Monday mornings. We thank you so very much for listening. Again, this is a daily format during training camp, so every Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, you will have a short Packers podcast that catches you up on everything you missed from the day before or the weekend before. I've received all kinds of emails and suggestions and tips and all kinds of nice stuff from you guys about what you like and what you don't like, and we encourage you to keep the feedback coming so we can find a way to fine-tune this and make it as enjoyable as we can for all of you listeners. So, as I mentioned, this is the end of our Monday podcast. Thank you very much for listening. I'm Michael Cohen, and I'll talk to you tomorrow.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're grinding out bicep curls or muscling the couch across the living room, crushing morning miles, or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, Smoothie King has fuel to help you maximize your workouts, own your recovery, and elevate your game. Give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs with a lineup of delicious smoothies made to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.